Listen, when you ever ask to explain the difference between rugby union and rugby league, we usually talk about the difference in codes, don't we? That's what separates the two, that union follows one code, one set of rules, and league another. That's how we tell them apart. Our passage reminds us that followers of Jesus are called to live by a distinct code also. It's a code, and if we live by it, will distinguish us from all other codes that we could possibly do life by. For instance, we can live by a code of selfishness and individualism, and many people do. We could live by a code of materialism. We could live by a code of moral relativism. There are other codes apart from what Christ calls you to that you could do life by. But what Jesus is calling his community of followers to is something distinct, something new, something that will set them apart from all the other codes that beckons for your attention. So what is this distinct code that the Christian community is called to live by? What am I talking about? Verses 9 through 10 gives us this clue. Whoever says he is in the light and hates his brother is still in darkness. Whoever loves his brother abides in the light, and in him there is no cause for stumbling. So, what I'm getting at is this. To live by the code of following Jesus, if that is what your life is marked by, that will mean you need to lay aside hate as a way of relating towards other people. Instead, seek love as the default assumption that you bring into your relationships. Let's give a little bit of time to think about this. Some critics of Christianity have said that love, or the emphasis of love as a virtue amongst the Jesus people, is a new notion. It's new to religion. It's something that Jesus and his merry band of followers introduced to the religious world. And they would say, a critic would say, if you page through your Old Testament, you will not find much in the way of love being talked about as the emphasis of the believing community or the preeminent virtue by which the believing community is to conduct themselves. John, he would simply challenge that assumption. John would say that it is hopelessly naive to reduce Christianity to a non-loving Old Testament and then a love-saturated New Testament. He would challenge that assumption. And he would say, if he was asked, that in the Bible there is a perfect uniformity, a perfect consistency, that love has always meant to be the preeminent virtue and operating principle of the believing community, whether you were an Old Testament believer or a New Testament believer. For instance, the believing community of the Old Testament are told very early on in their constitution as a people, they are told this: you shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Where did Jesus get that command from? To love your neighbor. He didn't make it up. He looked to the scriptures and said, there it is. You were always supposed to be the love community. The virtue of love as the operating principle of God's people has been deeply embedded in their religious code from the very beginning. So when John reminds his own readers of love in the Christian community, he also reminds them that he's not writing about something new, some principle that has been overlooked within the religion. There has always been supposed to be this mark of love upon God's people. Beloved, I am writing you no new commandment, but an old commandment that you had from the beginning. Those of you who have paid attention to our reading will say, but hold up. John has said that it is also a new commandment. So which is it? Is it old or is it new? He says to them that there is something particularly new about the love commandment. He says, at the same time, it is a new commandment that I am writing to you, which is true in him and in you. What we want to understand here is that love, though not new in the sense of a command, it is new in the sense of its expression. The love command in Scripture that John is talking about here is not new in the sense of its command, but new in the sense of its expression. Here's what I mean. Throughout human history, by the grace of God, there has been acts of love between mankind. But there has never been a perfect expression of love until Jesus. Jesus perfectly showed us how to express love as God is love. And that's what it means for the love commandment to be true in him, because Jesus made it true in its expression. He fulfilled it. He showed us what it's meant, what is meant by loving your neighbor. So it's new because it's true in him, and no one else can make that claim. He has demonstrated the greatest love to people like you and I, making sacrifice to redeem us for God and calling us into this holy community, which we call church. And he has given us an eternal good, which awaits at the redemption of all things. So while the love command is not new amongst God's people, we've just never seen what it really looks like. We've known we're supposed to do it, but we've never had the prime example until Jesus. And so now the Christian community, those who call themselves his followers, are called to imitate Jesus' love. We're supposed to be about love. Now, this might sound a little bit lovely, I'm sure, that we are supposed to be this community bubbling with love. You know, we're supposed to love one another. But isn't it just so difficult? I mean, it's one thing to say, yeah, I love people, but do you? Like, how hard is it to love people all the time? It's hard. I mean, you're sitting in Auckland traffic, right? And that's enough to expose most of us for our lack of love. That's not to say anything about people jumping queues at the movies or the ice cream line. We are just not loving all the time. We find it difficult to do. Even on Sunday mornings, right, when we're here to make extra effort, we bring our best guns. We bring our A game for love in the Christian community. Even here, it can be difficult to love each other. We just find it hard for love to be our default when we look at our relationships, right? Some people in Christian community even we find it difficult with because they've rubbed us the wrong way. They said something that we took in the worst possible way, Some people have let us down, and so they're difficult to love. And then for some of us, we might have had a really tough couple of days, and we bring all that angst and all that misdirected anger into our relationship with other people. It's not even about them, and we're like lashing out at them because we've had a terrible week. I don't think any of us are immune from that kind of thing, are we? I don't know if any of us are here brave enough to stick up our hand and say, look, I've done better. I've never made a mess of our relationships. So all I'm saying is that even in Christian community, the kind of people that John was writing to, even there, it's hard to do love. And sometimes in Christian community, we're just going to have to say sorry to one another. That'll be a part of our fabric as a people. It's what will knit us together, is the ability to say, sorry, man, I made a mess. I was out mowing my lawn one day, and I remember at church a couple of days earlier, I had brought some of this misdirected anger into a relationship with someone else. And as I was mowing my lawn, I was just terribly convicted that I ought to go right now and go and say sorry. So the lawnmower goes off. I head over to another person's house and I just said, look, I made a mess of this relationship on Sunday. Will you forgive me? That kind of thing is just part of Christian community. We can't get away from that because we're imperfect people. It's a glorious thing to be able to say to one another, I'm sorry, man, I wrecked it. It wasn't even about you. I didn't even mean to be like that, but I was, and I'm sorry. Sorry, forgive me. Those words go a very, very long way in Christian community. And so does the words, I love you. Forgiveness is yours. Come, let's take another step towards Jesus together. Those are good words in Christian community. I'm not saying those things will be easy. It's not easy to go and be humble with someone else like that. But I am saying that it is possible. It is possible that we can say to someone, look, I'm sorry, man. Will you forgive me? And it is possible to reciprocate and say, I forgive you. Let's walk towards Jesus again. John reminds us that there are some people in Christian community who seek no such help. They don't want humility. In verse 9, he tells us about these people. He says, whoever says he is in the light and hates his brother is still in darkness. Evidently, John knew some people in his church whose relationship with others, he could just say, that's hate. Dress it up all you like, but you're not loving. You're hating. And these were people who would enter Christian community and say, hey, I'm as Christian as any one of you. I walk in the light. That's what they were saying. They're saying, I am in the light. I'm Christian. And John says, why do you hate? Why is love not preeminent? I don't think that you are in the light anymore. Now be careful here. John is able to point out someone who's wrecking Christian relationship that way. But be careful. It is human nature to find fault in other people. You don't have to break a sweat to detect other people's problems and issues and wrongdoing. It's easy to point the finger and say so-and-so should love so-and-so a little bit better. It reminds me of seagulls when you're out having a picnic. Seagulls, right? They just swoop in, make a mess of everything, and then fly away, oblivious that they've done anything wrong. Some Christians do relationship that way. They just swoop in, make a mess, and then they fly off, ready to make a mess the next time they strike someone's relationship. Some Christians just do relationship that way and need grace and help to do better. They're just oblivious that they're doing anything wrong. What I'm saying to you is that it's easy. It's easy to spot the seagull, isn't it? It's easy to know who's doing relationship wrong or poorly. But I also know this. It is easy to then begin hating the seagull. And there's the danger. In pointing finger at those who relate poorly to others, we risk falling victim to the same problem. We risk being blinded by the same relational hatred that we point our finger at in others. And so John cautions us here, right? He says, don't just point your finger. Don't point your finger, because there is cause for stumbling if you do. If that's how you're going to do Christian life, just walking around pointing fingers at who should do better, you are in danger. There is cause for stumbling down that path. That's why it's important to insist on cultivating love as our default operating virtue in Christian community, that we might escape the gravity of hatred, which so easily pulls us into its orbit. So, if cultivating love as the operating virtue of our community is important, how are we to do it? I mean, if it's a big deal, right? It's not just some minor issue. If it's a big deal in Christianity to relate with love, how are we going to do that? The first thing I would say is that the assumption is that we are in Christian community. To love others is to be with others, right? So for some of us, this first step into cultivating love towards one another is to open our lives up a little bit more to one another. Maybe a goal for you would be just to say, once a month, I might invite someone to my house and we'll have a meal together. Let's just begin there. Some of us may just need to begin with something really simple that way, to actually be in Christian community in order to love Christian community. But for those of us who are doing that, who are actively part of a Christian church, are among people regularly, who call themselves Christian, if we look at what John has been writing, there are some breadcrumbs that will help us a little bit further. There are things that will help us cultivate Christian love if we look at what John has been saying up to this point. If you look back at what John's been writing, look at how he's been talking about the Christian community, right? He says things like this: my little children, imitating Jesus, remarkable. My little children, just like Jesus said. He calls them beloved. I mean, it's not just a throwaway word. That's like deep, deep affection. That's a deep bond of love. And he calls them brother or brother and sister. That Greek word will allow for that. These are just terms of communicating his affection and his peculiar love to the Christian church. Little children, I love you. Beloved, you are loved. Brother, sister. What John is doing by signaling these words in Christian community is he's telling us our first clue towards cultivating love. And that is that we can start thinking about one another for what we truly are. We can start thinking of one another as little children unto the Lord, as beloved, as brothers and sisters of a common community, a common group who is part of God's redeemed family. If we can see this, if we start to look at each other this way, that we are the beloved of the Lord, you and I, with all our idiosyncrasies and all the things that we like and don't like about each other, we are still the beloved. So if we can start thinking about each other this way, we will begin to learn the virtue of love as our default way of relating towards one another. Secondly, in order to cultivate love as the operating virtue in Christian community, this passage also indicates for us that love is a test. Love is a test. And that test will show whether you are actually what you claim to be, whether you are a follower of Jesus. So it's a test, kind of like stress grading is a test for the strength of timber, or throwing a piece of spaghetti against a window is a test for whether it's cooked or not. Love is also a test to see whether we are indeed followers of Christ in any meaningful sense. True enough, anyone could say, I am a Christian. We know this. There were people in John's Christian community who were saying, hey, I'm in the light. I'm a Christian. But John says, just hold up. Words are cheap. Let me see what you do with that light, with that claim to follow Jesus. Do you actually follow him into love amongst others? So the test of love will confirm whether there's any substance to our confession. So as Christian people, this passage is an invitation to test our hearts often, to discern whether we are actually committed to love in this church. And in order to test our hearts, we might pray a prayer that King David prayed. He asked this of the Lord, search me, O God, and know my heart. See if there be any grievous way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. We might just pray a prayer like that. Lord, search me. Shine your light into my heart that I might know whether I have loved well or whether I'm loving poorly and need to ask forgiveness from someone. We might just pray a prayer like that. And so that way we're just asking by faith for God to reveal any defective love, and then to give us the help we need to enable us to become more loving people. Now, I'm nearly done. Let me just talk about one further thought or question that might linger in your minds now. Say we agree. Say you and I are all in. We're saying, yes, love is supposed to be the primary operating virtue, our default setting when we're in Christian community and doing relationships. I'm with that. I can see that Jesus taught that. The Old Testament taught that. John keeps talking about it in his letter to a Christian church. I'm in. We're supposed to love. Let's do this together, humbly make a way forward. Does that now mean that everyone has to be my BFF? Does it mean that we and you have to become besties? Is that what love entails? Introverts like me, we shudder. We shudder at thoughts like that, of maintaining meaningful relationships with a lot of people. That's a terrifying thought for introverts like me, right? So is that what love implies, that we now have to do that? just be besties with everyone. As far as I can tell, I do not think that's what love means. Love as the default operating virtue amongst Christian people may or may not equate to deep and meaningful friendship. The reason I say that is because if we take a look at Jesus' life, if we take as an example the way that Jesus lived, the wisdom that he gives us is that he loved widely but befriended a few. Love widely, befriend a few. That's the wisdom of Jesus' life. It's not Facebook's wisdom. Facebook says befriend everyone and love a few. Jesus says love widely and befriend a few. So when Jesus and his disciples talk about love in Christian community, I don't think he's saying you now have to be besties with everyone. But what he is saying is that you have to relate to everyone in Christian community with love, whether they become your besties or not. You have to love them. You have to learn to love. That's what being a Christian is. We follow Jesus into learning how to love. So let me close then with this summary. Love is not new to the Christian community. And even though none of us, apart from Jesus, have done it perfectly, we can cultivate love toward one another. Moreover, this passage says our love for each other is a determining test of whether we are what we claim to be, followers of Jesus.